Eugenio Bianchi, who's going to speak about squeeze vacuum and loop quantum gravity.
Hello everybody, and thank you, Jorge, for the opportunity to speak in our international quantum gravity seminar. The topic of this talk is squeezed vacua in loop quantum gravity, and it's based on work in collaboration with Lucas Hack, Nelson Iocomizzo, Jonathan Guglielmon, and Bekir Baitas. As you see from the title, there are these two words, squeezed vacua, and I think I should really start by saying something about what does it mean, what is squeezed. So we can go to slide 2, where I illustrate it on the simplest possible physical system where there can be squeezing of the kind that I'm going to consider. It is two harmonic oscillators. There are two classes of states that I will discuss. The first one corresponds to displacing the vacuum. It's what we generally call coherent states. They are defined here in point A, and as you can see, one takes the vacuum of the two oscillators and then displaces it with the exponential of creation operators. It's the product of exponential of the creation operator for the first oscillator times the one for the second oscillator. So as you can see, this state is uncorrelated. The occupation number N1 and N2 for the two oscillators are not correlated. And as we know very well, these are coherent states. They are picked on a point in phase space, on the phase space of the two oscillators, that is labeled by this complex number Z that codes the position and the momentum, the expectation values. And they are chosen to be the same so that these two oscillators oscillate together. That's the expectation values, but the fluctuations around these averages are uncorrelated, as you can see from the fact that the state is a tensor product, ket z. The right-hand side, you can see a plot, a diagram. This is the probability of finding some occupation number, some excited level n for the first oscillator. And it's a Poisson distribution. It's coherent. It's picked on a value that is given by z modulus squared. Now, this class of states, these coherent states, appear in a large class of phenomena. If you think just about oscillators, you could think of preparing these oscillators in vacuum, then bringing them around on a trip and then stop or become inertial again. And the final state is going to be one of these displaced vacua. The two oscillators are going to oscillate. And this is the kind of state that appears, for instance, in quantum field theory when we consider an antenna. An antenna works in this way. You have a current inside the antenna, and it excites the state of the electromagnetic field of photons. It produces photons in one of these states. And technically, what happens is that if you're Hamiltonian, as a coupling of your field to an external current, it's a linear coupling, and you start with the vacuum, you're going to end into one of these displaced vacua that are picked on a classical solution, for instance, a classical electromagnetic field. And a lot of the studies of how to reconstruct classical space-time in loop quantum gravity have been focused on these coherent states, looking for states that are picked on one point in the phase space of loop quantum gravity. In this talk, I'm going to discuss a second class of states and argue that they are important for reconstructing a space-time. This is point B. These are squeezed vacua. And again, for the two harmonic oscillators, so you start from the vacuum, 0, 0, and you act on it with this squeezing operator that is the exponential of creation 1, creation 2. So now you have one parameter, gamma, and as you can see from the expansion on the basis of, on the n basis, on the basis of excitations, on the occupation numbers, N1 and N2 are correlated. Every time I find that the first oscillator is in the state n, I know that also the second is in the same state. And if you look at only one of the two oscillators, you find this distribution plotted here on the right. It's a thermal distribution. The temperature is fixed by the modulus of gamma. And the expectation value of the occupation number N1 is not zero is given by this expression given here. So it's a thermal distribution. It's thermal because there are correlations between the two oscillators, and we are looking at only one of the oscillators, so this introduces extra uncertainties that are due to entanglement. So that's how we get a thermal distribution. And for the case of the oscillators, the two oscillators, this is a state that you can obtain by starting with the two oscillators in the vacuum, and then carefully putting in between a spring of exactly the same length as you see in this picture. And this doesn't change expectation values or the position of each oscillator, but definitely changes the correlations between the two and the expectation value of the energy of each one of the two. So this class of squeezed vacua that I've illustrated here for two oscillators play an important role in various physical phenomena. Every time one hears about pair creation, one really technically means squeezed vacua. For instance, in the case of a black hole, one prepares a state, an in vacuum, then there's some matter that force and forms the black hole, and one can ask what is the final state at late times. And one finds that is one of these squeezed vacua, contains pairs of particles, and this is what's behind Hawking radiation. Another example is particle production in cosmology. There again, one starts with some state, with some vacuum, and then the scale factor changes in time, and this effectively squeezes the vacuum and produces a distribution of particles. And technically, what enters in all this phenomena is that you have an Hamiltonian that is quadratic in the field, and what is changing is the coefficient in front of the quadratic terms, for instance, phi phi or pi pi or both of them. That is what happens, for instance, in a background, in a cosmological background that is time dependent. You have the scale factor that depends on time. And you see that the key feature of this class of states, squeezed vacua, is the presence of correlations. They don't just give expectation value to observables. Expectation values that here, for instance, for the occupation number is a thermal expectation value, like for the energy of a gas of photons in a box. There's a finite expectation value of the energy. They do more, they introduce correlations. Correlations that we can describe in terms of this squeezing parameter gamma. And what I'm going to argue in the rest of this talk is that these squeezed vacua have a natural place within quantum gravity, and we actually need them if we want to reconstruct a space-time that is not just a classical geometry, but is a classical geometry with quantum fluctuations that are correlated exactly as we have learned from quantum field theory in a coarse space-time. With corrections and deviations at small scales, where quantum gravity is relevant. So we do want long-range correlations, and squeezed vacua provide them. So in this slide 2, I've illustrated these two classes of states. And for the rest of the talk, I'm going to keep this separation and illustrate coherent states for loop quantum gravity and squeezed vacua for loop quantum gravity. I hope that everything was clear on this slide. That's why I spent so much time on it, because it really contains most of the ideas without most of the technical details. So if there are questions already now, please ask before we go ahead. I should also ask, can you hear me well?
Yes.
Okay. So we can go ahead. Page 3 is the plan of the talk. It's three parts. I'm going to present first the structure, the technical, the formulation, how one defines squeezed vacua. And then in the third part, I'm going to go back to the physics. Okay? So point one, I would like to summarize what is known about the bosonic representation of loop quantum gravity. It's a well-studied subject. I'm going to summarize it in two slides. So let's go to slide 4, bosonic representation of loop quantum gravity. So how does it work? I've summarized it in a number of steps. In principle, following them, we should have everything we need. So we are interested in describing the Hilbert space of loop quantum gravity associated to a graph gamma. This is SU2 of the SU2 group to the number of links of the graph, modulo gauge invariance at nodes. And what I'm going to do is to consider a larger Hilbert space that is labeled by the same graph gamma, and that contains the Hilbert space of loop quantum gravity in a graph gamma. And this larger Hilbert space is what I call the bosonic Hilbert space, H boson. It consists of four oscillators per link, four L oscillators, two at each endpoint of a link. So if you look at this picture, you have two blobs connected by a link. This is, you should think of it as a link of the graph, and the blob on the left, the source of the link, and the blob on the right, the target of the link. And each blob contains these two oscillators. And I need to explain the labeling because it's the one that I'm going to use during the rest of the talk. It's partially standard, partially it's important to have it clear, so I'm going to spend a minute explaining it. So in each blob, you have two oscillators. And we label them by 0 or 1. This is the label A, just like for a spinor at the classical level. And I'm going to go back to spinors later. So that's the label A, labels the two oscillators in each blob. And then there's this label I. It goes from 1 to 12. And I is the label that tells you which endpoint of a link. It knows both the link and which endpoint. So I can be, for instance, the source of a link. Or if you want, if you have many links, you can call one the source, I equal 1, the source of the first link, and I equal big L plus 1, the target of the same link, so that you have a clear labeling and you can write them as matrices and do computations with them. And the standard creation and annihilation operators are defined here in point 2, and they have a standard bosonic commutation relation. Now, the interesting thing is something that was discovered by Schwinger in the 50s. That is, if you have two oscillators, you can build a unitary representation of SU2. And in fact, the generators, the angular momenta, L vector, they are just given by creation and annihilation operator multiplied and contracted with Pauli matrices. And the Casimir L square is just I times I plus 1, where this I, this capital I, is the operator written in point 3 on the right, that essentially measures just the spin, just J, instead of J times J plus 1. Okay, so this is the Schwinger representation of spin, and the way it becomes directly useful for loop quantum gravity is that in loop quantum gravity we do have spins. And this is something that was realized and proposed by Florian Girelli and Dieter Halivin, a beautiful paper of 2005, Spin Networks as Harmonic Oscillators, that I think is really behind many, many recent developments. So let me go to point 4. There's clearly a vacuum. It's the vacuum of all the oscillators. Or if you want, it's the product of the links or vacua for links. Call it the bosonic vacuum, omega 0, and is annihilated by all the annihilation operators. And then once you have that, you can write, for instance, for the endpoint of a link, you can write a spin state by creating excitations for the oscillator 0 and the oscillator 1 with occupation numbers J plus M and J minus M, so that you get a spin state in representation J with magnetic number M. Okay? So this is just the spin state at the endpoint of a link. And to get the Hilbert space of quantum gravity, we have to go further. So let's go to page 5. So I told you in the beginning that we have this large bosonic Hilbert space, and the Hilbert space of quantum gravity sits inside it. And one can get from the big Hilbert space to the subspace via projection. And the projection amounts to solving two classes of constraints. The first one is area matching, that you see there on the right, is called GL. and it just matches the spin on the left and on the right endpoints of a link. We just want to associate the spin to the link. And we are not fixing spins. It's just that when you project on the spin basis, you want spins to match. And this is generally called the area matching constraint. And the second constraint is gauge invariance. You want to impose a SU2 gauge invariance at nodes. And you see the Gauss constraint, GN, there in point 6. So you want to solve them both. And you can introduce projectors, a projector per link on area matching, and a projector per node for gauge invariance at nodes. And this product of projectors, I'm going to call it P gamma, is the projector from the bosonic Hilbert space to the Loop quantum gravity Hilbert space. So that for every state ket S in the bosonic Hilbert space, we get a state via projection in the Loop quantum gravity Hilbert space that I call ket gamma S. Okay? He knows about the connectivity of the graph of gauge invariance and area matching. And now among all these states, there's a special one that is the bosonic vacuum, the one where all the oscillators were in the vacuum. And when you project it, you get a state that you can call also vacuum, or quantum gravity vacuum on a graph. And the important thing is that this is exactly the Ashiker-Lewandowski vacuum when restricted to the graph gamma. So this is the message, the Ashiker-Lewandowski vacuum on a graph coincides with the bosonic vacuum. You don't need any projection, they are already all solved. Okay? And on this picture on the right, you see a graph, the dual cellular decomposition, that is all these cells that tessellate a three-manifold, and above it, this blow-up in big blobs that are nodes that contains a number of smaller blobs with couples of oscillators, and they are connected via links. So this is the picture of how to open up the graph Hilbert space into and embed it into the larger bosonic Hilbert space. Okay, so I hope it's all clear. I should say also that this is Rader standard. It's a Rader standard tool. It has played a really important role in recent developments in Loop quantum gravity. And on page 6, I'm going to mention some that that turn out to be relevant for the rest of the talk. There are many more. I'm just identifying some that are directly relevant. So I should certainly mention the use of this bosonic representation for studying the classical phase space of Loop quantum gravity on a graph. There is a standard formulation that is in terms of T star over SU2 per link of the graph. Yeah, there's something that comes out natural, that is the spinor representation. I'm mentioning here the work of Fedele and Speziale and Livino and Tambornino. So in the spinor representation, one associates an SU2 spinor per endpoint of a link, as before we were associating an accretion and annihilation operator, labeled by A. And this spinor representation at the classical level just describes the phase space of Loop quantum gravity. There are the same constraints that we discussed before. And it has a beautiful geometric interpretation in terms of polyhedra at nodes, print polyhedra, and then collected and put together as they are connected the nodes of a graph, so that one gets what is called a twisted geometry. Okay? The second important point is that this bosonic representation has played an important role in the description of coherent states for Loop quantum gravity. In particular, of coherent intertwiners. Intertwiners that are labeled by the shape of a polyhedron or by a point in the phase space of polyhedra. That is, again, a set of spinors with a closure constraint. And there's a whole hierarchy of coherent states for nodes, or coherent intertwiners. One can consider the ones at fixed spins, the Livin Speziale ones that correspond to the polyhedra with fixed areas as we studied with Pietro Donai and Simone Speziale and with Al Halagard. And there's more. There are other methods that have been developed that consist in not fixing the spins or the areas of the faces, but having a superposition also over the spins. For instance, one can fix the total area. These are the UN intertwiners of Fedel and Levin. And more generally, one can even freeze the total area, and these are what are now called the coherent intertwiners, or new coherent intertwiners. And there are other aspects I'm mentioning here, the use for spin foam amplitudes, the historical formulation, the recent formulation, the classical action of spin foams by Wolfgang and Wieland is in these terms, and the use for the spin network evaluation. Okay, so I would like to add to this list squeeze vacua. Squeeze vacua can be phrased exactly in the same terms in terms of this bosonic representation. They are not coherent states, they are squeezed states. So, page 7, this is part 2 of the talk, squeeze vacua. So, page 8, I do it in two steps, in two slides. The first slide is about squeezed vacua on a bosonic lattice. We really know everything about this system. You can find a very detailed description in this paper together with Lucas Hackle and Nelson Giacomizzo. It works this way. No? So you have your bosonic Hilbert space, H boson, and you realize that it carries a unitary representation of the symplectic group, SP8L. Linear canonical transformations are the classical lemma. And the generators of this group are, they are called E, capital E, capital F, and capital F double. Okay? Notice that E contains A dagger and A, so it doesn't really change the overall number of excitations, while S dagger raises it by 2, creates F. Okay, so the bosonic vacuum, omega 0, is a state that is invariant under transformations generated by capital E. They leave it invariant. They form the stabilizer subgroup of the symplectic group, this transformation. The important thing is point 3. If you apply a unitary transformation generated by S dagger, this transformation squeezes the vacuum. Exactly as we saw on page 2, where we were discussing two oscillators, I act with the exponential of creation-creation. Here I have many creation operators because I have many sites, or more properly, I have many couples of links and nodes. So I get a matrix of parameters that I call a gamma ij ab. So a squeeze vacuum is now labeled by the bosonic vacuum omega 0 squeezed with parameter gamma, and I'm going to call it omega gamma. And notice that this parameter gamma has to satisfy some conditions. And it turns out that it has to live in the single unit disk of complex matrices that is defined here. It's bounded. You cannot introduce more than infinitely many correlations. Okay, so this is the definition of the squeeze vacuum on a bosonic lattice. A remark, it is point 4, is that if you have two of them, two squeeze vacua, they are related by what is known as a Bogoliubov transformation. It is absolutely familiar in, for instance, quantum theory in space or in condensed matter physics. And another way to say this is that the squeeze vacuum is annihilated by some operator, B, that is a linear composition, a linear combination of A and A dagger. This linear combination still has to satisfy the canonical commutation relations. And gamma is what tells you how to linearly combine the two. Okay? And there's a lot that is known about these states that I'm not going to directly use in this talk. For instance, we know how to characterize their entanglement entropy for subsystems, how to compute correlations, how to determine the entire Hamiltonian subsystem, and these are all things that are gonna become useful once we ask the same questions for squeezed vacuum and quantum gravity. But at this point, I'm really just interested in introducing this squeezed vacuum. Okay, so let's go to page 9, where I'm now ready to define what is a squeezed vacuum for loop quantum gravity. And it's rather straightforward. It's this point 1. I'm calling a squeezed vacuum for loop quantum gravity a state labeled by the graph gamma and this omega gamma. And it's obtained simply by taking the squeezed vacuum on a bosonic lattice, omega gamma, and projecting it down to the loop quantum gravity Hilbert space. It is this P gamma that you see in the formula in the box. If you recall, P gamma is the projection on area matching and gauge invariance at nodes. Okay? And in calculations, it's useful to have a more explicit representation. For instance, a representation that where it's easy to read the components on the spin network basis, where the spin is fixed. Because the important thing of these states is that, as you see, spins are not fixed, intertwiners are not chosen, everything is coded into that matrix gamma, the squeezing parameters. So the point now is how to learn how to write a matrix gamma so that the state has all the properties that you may require. For instance, given expectation values and given correlations. And this representation of the loop quantum gravity squeeze vacuum is here in point 2. Turns out that one can actually perform this projection and write the state as a sum of states with fixed spin on links. And the projection on given spins is given by this expression where there's a generating function g gamma that depends on gamma, and on it there's a derivative operator acting as derivative operator of order 2j if we fix the spin j. Okay?
What did omega really come from?
So dummy parameters, omega or probably w in, w, they are this w and w bar, they appear in the derivative and they appear in the generating function, and they are then set to zero after taking the derivative. So they are dummy variables and they are used to write this representation. You can think of them, and they should be thought of, as spinors associated to the endpoint of a link. In fact, you see they are labeled by source link or target link. And they give also a nice technique for working with this squeezed vacuum, because if you look at the generating function, it's the sum of two terms. The first one in the exponential reads entries of the squeezing matrix gamma. It is really a general matrix. It doesn't have to be something that has entries only to if I and J are connected by a link, because we want to introduce correlations, even long-range correlations, between two links that are far away. So we're not assuming that gamma is a sparse array. Gamma is what we need to obtain certain correlations. And the second term in the generating function, in the exponential, is instead a creation operator that acts only at a wedge. It is what is called a couple of links at the same node. So you see it's F with labels, it attacks only at a link that is a couple source target. Okay? Okay, so this concludes the definition of squeezed vacuum. Are there questions up to this point?
Yeah, so, I mean, to begin with, you had a harmonic oscillator, right? A bunch of oscillators. So, and given a graph that each node, you had two harmonic oscillators, and that is why your phase space had 8 times L, because there are two nodes, so there are four harmonic oscillators, and each one has two dimensional phase space. So until then, it's clear. And then you've got a Hilbert space associated with all these harmonic oscillators, and you're looking at squeezing the vacuum for all these harmonic oscillators, and then projecting.
That's correct.
So it's true that the formulae look very complicated, but conceptually, you're just looking at the squeeze. So for each harmonic oscillator, you've got a squeezing parameter gamma. Can you say?
Any?
Yeah, so important point. There are many, so there's a question, there's a remark and a question by Abai. The remark is that even if this formula with the genetic function looks complicated, conceptually all this is very simple. One has many oscillators, one squeezes them, and then one projects down to the loop quantum gravity of the space, and that's all. There's nothing more than that. No, that's the definition, it's the one in the box. And then there's the question, so is it correct to say that there's a parameter, a squeezing parameter gamma, one per oscillator? And it is an important point that I'm going to comment more in the following. So the matrix gamma is really a matrix on all of the graph. The indices I and j span the source and the target of all links of the graph. So as a matrix is a matrix of dimension 8L times 8L, and it's complex. So we have plenty of parameters. And one can consider simpler cases where this matrix is a sparse array. For instance, it has entries only if two couples of oscillators are connected by a link. But we really want to do more than that. That's what I'm going to discuss in part three. Are there all the questions? Was this clear? Okay, then we can go to part three. That is, well, really going back to physics, or at least going back to the interpretation of this space. How to reconstruct a space-time out of this space. And by reconstructing a space-time, I really mean that we should look at both expectation values of geometric operators and correlations, and check if there are long-range correlations. Page 11. So that's a summary of the status, at least as I see the status at this point. So we want to reconstruct a space-time, and formally speaking, what we mean is that we want to find a quantum gravity state that has prescribed expectation values, or vacuum expectation values, and prescribed correlations for the metric operator once everything is gauge fixed, so that we can make sense of this formula. It is these two lines, V and C. And one standard strategy that has worked extremely well it is perturbative quantum gravity and its application to cosmology and to the early universe, is to split the metric in a background that is a classical function and a term that is the graviton field, and then study the dynamics of the background. For instance, it could be a Friedmann-Lemaître-Robertson-Walker dynamics, and that gives you directly the vacuum expectation value V, if you're at 3-level, and then for the correlations, you choose a state for this graviton field so that you reproduce correlations that in cosmology, if you're at distances that are small compared to the scale of curvature, you may want to have them the same as in the Minkowski vacuum. So that's a standard strategy in inflationary cosmology. And the strategy used in loop quantum cosmology, in the current approach to loop quantum cosmology, goes way beyond this. There's the part of the geometry that is, for instance, the homogeneous part that is quantized, and it has an effective dynamics, the effective quantum cosmology dynamics for the scale factor, for instance. And then on that, one can put quantum fields, continuous quantum fields, within the approach that is currently studied, propagate on a quantum space-time, and they have effective equations. Okay, so this is very efficient way of treating the problem. You have a space-time in the sense of having a background or a vacuum expectation value and correlations. We don't want to go beyond that. We want to study the problem within full loop quantum gravity. And the approach that has been mostly studied is an approach that focuses on semiclassical states, focuses on coherence. One really focuses on the first one of these two entries, focuses on V, not on C, on the expectation value of the metric, of the intrinsic geometry and the extrinsic geometry, and their dispersion, without worrying too much about correlation. And this is really common to all the many and very important developments, starting with the 8 kernel coherent states studied by Tiemann and Benjamin Barron. It's what happens, for instance, when one looks at coherent intertwiners of all generations in the series of development, starting with the Levine Speciale coherent tetrahedra. One takes this chunks of space and picks them on a classical tetrahedron or a classical polyhedron with given value of the area of the faces and a given value of the angle between faces. It is really picks them on a point in phase space. And then one mounts them together, puts them together according to a graph, but there's no input about how they are correlated. For instance, we know that the shape of a face depends on the coherent intertwiner at a node, and for instance, the length of an edge depends on that. We can pick on some definite shape and have a shape matching across the link by requiring that the expectation values are the same, but the fluctuations of the two are going to be completely uncorrelated. So, even if this geometry is not twisted in expectation value, all the fluctuations are going to be twisted or not shape matching. And coherent spin networks that have been used are all of this kind. The only exception that I could tell is something that was really forced upon us when studying the graviton propagator and the boundary state in the graviton propagator, because there we were really asking, are there correlations, and are they of the correct kind? Are they of the kind that reproduce the graviton propagator in perturbative quantum gravity in flat space? And when we tried, it was immediately clear that to have correlations, the dynamics, the spin foam vertex, already at the level of a single vertex, introduces correlations between different links and different nodes that are not touching each other. Well, in the simplest graph, they are always nearby, but you still want more than two links, for instance, could be non-touching, not connected to the same node, could be opposite. And so the dynamics introduces these correlations, and the state, if it's a state that is supposed to describe a spacetime like Minkowski spacetime, also has to have these correlations. So there, followed a pragmatic approach. We knew that we needed them, and we introduced coefficients that correlate at least the spins. By introducing a Gaussian in spins, picked on some values with some covariance matrix, and we fitted the covariance matrix. And what we really want to do now is to go beyond this and develop a framework where we can accommodate these correlations, have them as labels in our states, exactly as we do for coherent states. So our states that are labeled not just by vacuum expectation values on a point in phase space, but labeled by expectation values and correlations. And then, well, this is a state, and then now you can use the dynamics to choose among the states the one that, for instance, solve the Hamiltonian constraint, not just in expectation value, but also in two-point functions, that is the expectation value of hx and hy, or h at a node and loop and h at another node and loop, is still zero as an expectation value. So this is point B, that is what I've discussed in the first two parts of the talk, squeeze vacuum for loop quantum gravity, and then now I want to illustrate in more detail.
By a bias to one precise.
Okay, very good. So Alejandro Corici is making me notice that there are some coherent states. There are U1 coherent states. They do have linked correlations, and this is exactly the direction we want to go into. Thanks for mentioning that. I was not aware of that. Okay. So page 12. I'm gonna first mention again what is the point in this space that we may want to pick on. It is in terms of spinor variables, a spinor parent point of a link. So you have a spinor Z parent point of a link, and then you want to impose area matching and closure at nodes. And the question is, how do you reconstruct twisted geometry? Well, it's gonna be the twisted geometry with normals to faces given by the unit vector that is given by the spinor Z, and the areas that are given in terms of the norm of Z. And then there's something that has to do with the extrinsic geometry that is coded into faces between two of these Zs, conceptually.
We can continue.
Okay, Amiam, I can hear you well. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, we were on page 12, and there were probably some questions I couldn't hear. So if there are questions, I'm happy to answer. Okay, if not, we go on. I have a few concrete examples, and then we can go to the discussion part. So I'm on page 12. I was telling you that classical space is labeled by spinors. One can introduce a coherent state for loop quantum gravity that is just labeled by these spinors. And these are the ones in point A. One just displaces the vacuum for each one of the oscillators separately, and then one projects down on the loop quantum gravity Hilbert space. And these are known to have expectation values that are twisted geometries. And now, in point B, I want to consider a squeezed vacuum, not of the most general kind that I'm interested in, a rather simple one that is just labeled by the same variables, the same spinors. So my matrix gamma, my squeezing parameters gamma, are a matrix that is a sparse array, is zero everywhere, except if I and J are endpoints of a link. In that case, I take the matrix to be ZZ. Okay, ZIA, ZJB. So on page 13, you can see this worked out in detail by focusing on a single link. Because after all, that matrix corresponds to link-wise squeezing. And I can just ask questions about a single link, even before projecting on gauge invariant nodes. So there's this picture of two blobs with two oscillators in each. There's a spinor. I'm writing the spinor as a unit spinor, Z hat, for instance at the source, times magnitude lambda. Okay? And the coherent state is in point A, where the area matching constraint introduces correlations between the spin state at the source and at the target. It fixes the same J on the two. And yeah, it's written as a superposition of spin states. And the probability of finding some spin J is plotted here in this plot with the spin probability distribution. As you see, it's Poissonian, as expected. It's peaked on some spin. That in our language, in our bosonic language, spin is operator I, capital I source. And the expectation value is 1/2 of the parameter lambda modulus square. You can ask other questions, for instance, about expectation value of the holonomy or expectation value of the flux at an endpoint. And all this is well studied and well known. Okay? I'm just focusing on the spin. And in point B, you can ask the same question about the squeezed vacuum on a single link. And you see again that it's going to be in the spin representation, it's a sum of the spins. Each one is a coherent spin, a coherent SU2 spin pointing in direction Z hat. And it's a superposition of spins labeled by gamma that, in order to belong to this figure unit disk, has to have norma smaller than 1. So now you can look at the expectation value of the spin, and you find that it's given by this formula here, and when modulus of gamma goes to 1, the spin diverges, otherwise it's something finite. And most importantly, the probability distribution is not picked like a Gaussian, like would be a Poisson distribution for large displacement. It's a thermal distribution. It's always quite probable to find either spin 0, 1 half, or 1. The average can be shifted like you can do by raising the temperature of a gas and shifting the expectation value of the energy. But still, the most probable configurations are always the ones of low spin. And while most of the focus up to now has been on peaking on a point in phase space and requiring, for instance, that our polyhedra have phases of given area, now I'm really shifting the perspective and saying the expectation values, we are going to get them right from squeezing. So you get an expectation value, it's fixed, but it's always a superposition of spins. So if you think about a graph, it's always going to contain all the subgraphs because there are some spins that are zero, and this is a change in perspective. Now I'm moving the focus from being picked like a Gaussian to having an expectation value because of squeezing. Now this is what happens for spin. You see this fall off as a thermal distribution. This is the expectation value of the magnitude of the spin. If you look at the fluxes, that is this direction Z up, well, they're just picked in the standard way, the standard Gauss-like way. Okay? So this reproduces something standard with a new twist. It's HTC. Are there questions about these two plots? I think this is an important point, even if not so profound, but there's a shift in perspective. It is from Gaussian to thermal distributions because of entrapment. Okay, so the second example that I want to give is on page 14. That is, I really want to go beyond these correlations that are local, that are just across links. We really want long-range correlations. And coherent states, they cannot provide them clearly because they are a product of sites, and then there's a projection. Projection introduces some correlation, but these fall off too quickly. They are not long-range. They are short-range. And if you use link-wise squeezing, as the one that I described before, that is now in point B, they are still short-range. So if you want long-range correlation, what you have to do is to use your freedom in choosing the squeezing parameters and unfreeze these zeros in the gamma matrix that are the off-diagonal entries, the ones that correlate different spins, different intertwiners, different angles, even for nodes that are far away. Okay? And in particular, I'm giving this diagram where you see a spin network. There are nodes, links, and loops. I'm considering two loops, alpha 1 and alpha 2. And I may want to compute the expectation value of the Wilson loop around alpha 1 and the expectation value around alpha 2. And I would like to be able to pick on a curvature that is given. But I want more. I want also correlations, so Wilson loop, to be prescribed. And in order to do that, coherent states are not enough. Link-wise squeezing is not enough. But now we have a clear way to code it into this squeezing matrix gamma. And that's what's explained on page 15. So I'm considering an extremely simple case where you just have two loops, okay? I'm calling them alpha 1 and alpha 2. So that our squeezing matrix is, let me see, 4 plus 8 by 8. It's an 8 by 8 matrix. It has blocks that are 4 by 4. So the first block is for the blocks on the diagonal are for single loop. And the blocks off diagonal in gamma, they are the ones that correlate the two. Okay? And using the representation in the generating function, we get the expansion in the spin basis. One gets some upper geometric functions. It's all perfectly under control. And now one can study different regimes. For instance, I can put the parameters beta 1 and beta 2 equal. and set the off-diagonal terms to zero, lambda equals zero or epsilon equals zero. This gives me uncorrelated loops. So I can compute, for instance, the spin on the first whistle, the spin on the loop alpha 1, and I get this expression r squared divided by 1 minus r squared. So I can get any expectation value I want. For the whistle loop, one gets this expectation value for a large spin that is 2 cos theta. It is essentially what one would expect from a geometric interpretation where theta is the flux of the magnetic field through the loop. So all good up to this point, and this is just a tensor product of two loops. To introduce correlations, one has to unfreeze these terms that are off diagonal, so put epsilon different from zero, and look at correlation functions. For instance, I can look at the correlation of the spin 1 and spin 2, I call it CII, or the correlation of Wilson loop that I call CWW. And this clearly for epsilon equals zero, they vanish. For small epsilon, they scale as epsilon square. And in the plot on the right, the parameters r and theta are fixed. Epsilon is chosen, is small. And the parameter phi, the phase, is plotted in the range 0 pi. And the continuous curve is spin-spin correlations, and the dashed line is Wilson loop correlations. So you see that we can introduce these correlations. These two loops could be far away in the graph, and this would be prescribed correlations. You see that we can put them positive or negative. So by an appropriate choice of parameters, we can either correlate spins or anti-correlate spins. And independently, we can either correlate Wilson loops or anti-correlate them. There are enough parameters for adjusting expectation values and correlations. So to summarize, there's enough freedom to pick or to get an expectation value that is one point in phase space, one point in intrinsic and extrinsic geometry, and there's still enough freedom to code also correlation. Okay? So page 16 is the summary. I discussed this bosonic representation. I told you about squeezed vacua. And I have given some examples on how to choose the squeezing parameters so that one gets expectation values and long-range correlations so that one can reconstruct a space-time. And I would like to conclude with some perspective, because I've been speaking about long-range correlations and how to code long-range correlations. And a natural question that should come up that is here on page 17 is how much do we know about correlations and long-range correlations at space-like separation? Certainly, from quantum field theory, for instance, in Minkowski space, we know that the vacuum is highly correlated. It's correlated at space-like separation. It's entangled. Correlations for a massless scalar go as 1 over distance square, even if it's space-like, even if the two points are space-like separated. We know this very well. And it's rather remarkable that the current observations and the current inflationary paradigm supports the view that the very early universe was already highly entangled. Here in the picture you see the familiar picture of the cosmic microwave background and temperature fluctuations. If you go to page 18, this is the spectrum as it depends with the angular momentum. You see that there are ripples. These ripples don't really have to do with the quantum state. This has just to do with classical physics and the interaction of matter, how density perturbations evolve in the presence of gravity and instabilities. So you can go to page 19, where one just removes these ripples. So just one goes back to how the continuous curve, the red curve in 18, is predicted theoretically. And there's a part of the prediction that it comes from quantum field theory, and a part that comes from just evolving some classical stochastic distribution. So on page 19, you see that there's a definite behavior for the power spectrum of primordial fluctuations. that matches what is seen, and you can go to page 20, what is seen observationally. For instance, here is the value of the ns, the exponent in the wave amplitude, the value that comes from observation. And to obtain this almost scale invariant spectrum, the standard perspective is that you need an inflationary phase where the background geometry expands in an exponentially fast way, in an exponentially accelerated way, an inflationary background, but you need more than that. You need to start with a state that has a specific amount of correlations, such that these correlations are like the ones in the Minkowski vacuum when the distances are small compared to the curvature scale. So the indication is really is that at the beginning of inflation, when the typical length scale is just 10 to the 5 Planck length, the state already has correlations of this length separation. And this is rather close to the quantum gravity regime we try to describe with loop quantum gravity. I'd like to stress that the squeeze vacuum encode both a space-time geometry and correlations, and it may turn out to be a needed ingredient to describe the early universe within a full loop quantum gravity. And I'll conclude here. Thank you very much.
Questions?
This is Abhay. So Alex pointed out that almost 10 years ago, there was some work that Jurek and I had done, and then it was followed with by some other work with Steve Fairhurst and other people. So I just want to sort of put that in perspective of what we just heard from Eugenio, the similarities and differences. So in the finished work, we had only looked at Maxwell theory in Minkowski space-time, basically, but put it in the language of loop quantum gravity. So basically, instead of having spin networks, we had flux networks, and we had graphs, and we had the holonomies and the fluxes, and everything was exactly as what we do for loop quantum gravity. And in that, the point was exactly what was explained to us by Eugenio. Namely, we're trying to construct the states which would have these correlations. So therefore, they would go. They would not be the kind of coherent states that are obtained from, for example, from complexifiers or the list that Eugenio showed us before. Of course, Eugenio was talking about quantum gravity, and I'm not talking about just Maxwell field. But the whole point was that we did get these correlations, and we studied, various different kinds of correlations and different phases of Maxwell theory, quantum Maxwell theory. It is well known that there are these three phases. One is called the Coulomb phase, one is the confined phase, and one is the phase that we actually, so the Coulomb phase is the, what is the third phase? It's a dual of the confined phase. In other words, instead of confined, It depends on how the Wilson loops behave or the dual of the Wilson loop behave. So the Coulomb phase is what we want, and we showed explicitly that the coherent states that were constructed from complexifiers do not have the correlations to give us the Coulomb phase. And the Coulomb phase that we have does have these very long distance correlations. They have, of course, to do with the powers of the Laplacian operator in the continuum description, and using this the shadow states, one could see what these correlations were. So these were exactly the squeeze states in the language of what Eugenio was talking about. Now I'll take 1 minute to explain one extremely confusing point. And that confusing point is that the relation or the differences between squeeze states and the coherent states. Right? So the statement is that what is called the vacuum state in ordinary quantum field theory in Minkowski space-time, or the coherent state in ordinary quantum field theory in Minkowski space-time, those would be squeezed relative to a completely different vacuum, which is analogous to the diffeomorphism invariant vacuum that Urich and I had introduced. So let me start from scratch. If you start with the diffeomorphism invariant vacuum and construct on it coherent states, they will be like the complexified coherent states. They would not have correlations in different places. If you start with the diffeomorphism invariant vacuum and added, constructed appropriate squeeze states, then you get the ordinary vacuum state in Minkowski spacetime and the coherent states in Minkowski spacetime. So again, the statement is that you can be an ordinary quantum field theory in Minkowski spacetime. There you've got a notion of vacuum and you've got coherent states and so on. But these are all squeezed relative to the vacuum state we use in loop quantum gravity. And these old papers that I've mentioned to you, particularly the much more detailed one with Steve Ferris and I think Josh Willis, those actually worked out the correlation functions in great detail. So the program that Eugenio outlined is actually carried out for Maxwell field. Now the extreme non-triviality of what Eugenio is proposing with his collaborators is that one is actually going beyond Maxwell field theory in Minkowski spacetime. In all the calculations we did, in the construction of the coherent, these new states on spin networks or flood networks, we used the background spacetime geometry. The way that Eugenio has proposed the spin networks and so on, of course, there is no background spacetime geometry. These correlations are between links, which are just, there is no, so to say, arc anywhere to say that something falls like 1/r², if you like. So the non-triviality is really how do we generalize the kind of thing that we already knew in terms of flux networks and for Maxwell theory, and also for linearized gravity, I should emphasize. How do we generalize that to really diffeomorphism invariant context, I mean, such as the one that Eugenio pointed out, where, for example, in the, to get the two-point correlation function for the graviton-graviton for the graviton propagator, they had to introduce this correlation. So that was in the diffeomorphism invariant context. So in the older work that I had done with Urich and Steve Ferris and Josh Willis and so on, we used very, very strongly a background geometry. And now what one is doing up here is really removing the background geometry. Conceptually, we did not need to use the background geometry, but in practice, of course, we did need to use the background geometry to actually take over the Fock space from Minkowski space, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the big lesson that we are going to learn about is this. Now, Eugenia just finished with these beautiful pictures about the Planck satellite and seeing those particular the correlations and so on. Now, if one is interested in reproducing that in the language of spin networks and so on, we can do it right away by taking the results that we had some time ago and just putting it in this cosmological context. Again, there will be spin networks. There's a background geometry, and then which will be sort of say the dress effective metric will give us some background geometry, and you can put these fluctuations there. We can construct spin networks there, and we can calculate this state, which will be highly correlated for perturbations. But I think what Eugenio has opened door is really to do it in full quantum gravity without any perturbations, right? I mean, not looking at background plus perturbations. Background plus perturbations, we can do it today. It's nice, I think, when somebody should do it. It's a nice exercise, but to take over from what was done before to this particular case of perturbations on cosmological background rather than on Minkowski spacetime. But the non-trivial part, I think really the non-trivial part, is doing this in the full SC2 case where there is no background geometry at all. So this would be like the slide 14 that Eugenio showed us. Any comments, Eugenio?
I agree on all the points, and look forward to looking at these older papers that I was not aware of.
More questions? Okay, let's thank you, Jenny, again.
We have room for another 10 minutes.
Yes.